discouraged. The man, he ain't so hard to understand. You know, he's not trying to make trouble. He's just stressing out like every other fan. Well, there's good in every team. Things aren't always what they seem. You can always find a winner if you try. Hey, things will be better. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they will for Parker and the man. Oh, yes, they will for Parker and the man. Even though Mike Wilson, he can't understand. Parker and Wilson.
Happy Columbus Day week and happy Canadian Thanksgiving week. My name's Mark. Welcome to the podcast. The guy that's sitting next to me at his palatial villa. That's where we are today, at the palatial sunshiny villa.
You see how beautiful this deck is, Mark? Come on, is this not a beautiful deck?
It's a nice sitting, doing a podcasting deck. Is that how you want me to put it?
I love it. Just like that.
Robert Lee Paca, Jr. And Rob, what are you Canadian thankful for this week, this Canadian Thanksgiving week?
I'm thankful.
It's got to be in Canadian terms. You got to say A at the end of it.
I'm thankful that McDonald's stopped selling Canadian bacon with their sandwich. No, I think they still.
Did they used to have Canadian?
Yeah,
is that what it was? I've never had a breakfast sandwich.
The Egg McMuffin had Canadian bacon.
I've never had a McDonald's breakfast sandwich.
You know what they call that in Canada when you go get an Egg McMuffin?
Eh, what?
They call it American ham. You know, you want American ham on it. It's like French fries. And when you go to what you call it, you know what they call French fries in Paris? American potatoes.
Well, you know what's funny about that?
Because they don't eat French fries.
Well, Rob said, hold on, I got to go turn over my chicken. Now you've talked about chicken, you talk about slamming hams. What is your deal?
I've got a little issues. I got a couple issues.
I got a couple issues. All right, let's get right into it because we don't have time to waste on these podcast people. This is podcast 6, I think. I'm going to stop counting them because I forget what they are. Okay, so there's this little matter of baseball thing on Sunday. It was no big deal. The Tigers had gone 23 straight shutout innings of baseball until Dusty Pedroia's RBI double in the 6th. Then Boston got 6 runs in the last 4, and they won the game.
Oh, is that it? You're waving your hand like nothing happened.
The Red Sox got 6 runs in the last 4 innings and won the game.
Nothing to see here. Is that what you're saying?
Nothing going on. Nothing talked about. It's like nothing ever went on in Fenway.
Can I tell you this? Most devastating loss. I don't care. Anybody can paint it, try to poo-poo it, Mark, discount it, whatever word you want to use. Most unbelievable thing. I've never seen a team dominate another team the way the Tigers dominate the Red Sox in that band box and all that stuff, Mark. For them to do what they do and for the Red Sox to come out with a split, not the Tigers, for the Red Sox to come out with the split and go to Comerica Park 1-1 on Tuesday was tremendous. And I'm sorry, and I don't care what you say and what anybody else says. I'm not blaming Benoit. I'm not blaming anybody else. I'm blaming Jim Leland for that loss because he managed scared. I don't care what anybody, he managed scared. And you can't manage scared when you're trying to win.
Well, when you're up 5-1, and you got a pitcher who's throwing, it was 106 at the time, Scherzer, and he's got the 13 strikeouts. This is after the 12 strikeout Anibal Sanchez performance. So you're talking 25 Ks amongst your starters in 2 games. And I know what people want to do, and you got to let go of the ghost, people. Seriously, and it's the people that are, some will be listening to this podcast. Some people, I'm looking, my head's in my hands, I'm shaking my head. You got to stop comparing today's baseball with yesteryear, with Tom Seaver and Bob Gibson. Well, Fergie Jenkins, he won 20 games 6 straight years and completed like 30 a year. And Jack Morris from 1991. Well, Jack would have been pissed. He would have yelled at his manager if he ever had to come out of a game. He would have thrown stuff. You're in a different world now. You're in a world filled with humongous buccarinos. I agree. Rob's doing the thing with the hand. Is a different kind of investment. When Tom Seaver, I said this to Rob, when Tom Seaver, the great Tom Terrific, who still, I think, holds the all-time record for the highest vote percentage on a first ballot Hall of
what
Fame
is it,
vote.
Like 97%,
yeah. Wow. So there was, I don't know what idiots were the 3% that said, you know what, Seaver just can't get in. He just can't put Tom Seaver at his 300-plus win.
It was, of course, somebody who didn't get along with him.
Sure, probably hated him. Although, from what I hear, how would you hate Tom Seaver? But away from that, I think his first Cy Young Award, he made like $32,000. Even in today's money, that's not $16 million. It's not 50, not even close. So it's a different kind of investment you're hanging on to. And yeah, I agree. When I was growing up, there was no such thing as Tommy John surgery, so any surgery they had wasn't named after the great or less than great or somewhat average Tommy John.
No, because we saw Tommy John pitch. You know?
I can't get called the great
right.
Tommy John.
But you know what I mean. I mean, he was a pitcher in the year before it became...
25 years?
Yes, he pitched for a long time.
After he had the Tommy John surgery, too. But I don't remember shutting guys down. Baseball has changed. If there's really a sport... I mean, they all have changed. The rules have changed. Hockey doesn't have as many fights. Football, obviously, has changed incredibly over the years. Basketball, that's pretty much the same game for the most part.
No, Mark, when the Pistons, the bad boy Pistons, do you remember how physical it was? It's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same physicality.
You tell me LeBron James playing against the Pistons of the bad boy Pistons, would that stuff go on? Are you kidding?
By the way, you know the biggest change in basketball in the NBA that we never talk about? Remember 3-2?
Oh, yeah. I remember. That was
some people don't even know what we're talking about.
That was the bad era of the NBA. You had the free throw shooting was so bad that they gave you 3 shots to make 2.
So you could actually miss a shot. You were actually promoting failure, in a way.
3-2. I'll never forget that. They finally got rid of that.
I know, but it was there for a while. So, yes, baseball, amongst other sports. So, all right, having said that long diatribe for the most part, you cannot compare how you work the starting pitching staff. But last night, in that situation, up 4 with 106 pitches thrown, I still can't stand pitch counts, I would have trotted Scherzer out for the 8th without even thinking twice. And I would have said, let me see you. I know one thing, you can put 2 guys on and I still can't get beat. 4 runs is going to tie this thing. You have a 4-run lead, my starting pitcher. I have 6 outs left to get.
What usually happens, Mark, is if a guy's pitched a great game, a manager won't let you pitch to a situation that where you're going to lose it. Do you know what I mean? Like he'll let a guy, okay, it's 5-1. He'll put a couple of guys on, but that's it. You know, I'm not going to let the bases get loaded so that you can wind up, you know, maybe not getting a loss, but even not getting a win.
Because that's why we pay millions for the backup guys. The guys at the back end of the rotation. The ones you call the closers and the relief guys.
Right. But real quick, just to digress just a little bit. I believe the pitch count started from that Billy Martin Oakland A's staff that he decimated. Do you remember all the innings and stuff that those guys pitched? They had 3 young guys. Who was it? Matt Keogh. Do you remember? I can't remember.
Brian Kingman, maybe? Because Kingman lost 20 games 1 year. It was Matt Keogh for sure. Brian Kingman, I think, was the other.
There was 3 of them.
I think even a better one. It wasn't Mike Morgan, was it?
Mike somebody. Morgan. It was.
Something
like
that.
But I think, don't you think that's where it started? Because I don't know.
It's certainly a late 80s into 90s philosophy. There was. I'm telling you, in the 70s, we didn't worry how many pitches Steve Carlton threw.
I never thought about it. It was not even a conversation. Mark, I don't even know if they did what you call it. Kept the pitch count actually
in the
front
spot. I don't think
they did. Now they give you the pitch count, how many strikes, how many balls.
It's on the screen.
Right. It never was like that. You never knew that.
No.
You didn't know how fast they were throwing. You didn't know any of that stuff.
Well, the radar gun was very unreliable. You know, Danny Littweiler, the former Spartan baseball coach, is credited with inventing the old jugs gun.
Yeah, but who was the jugs gun for? Scouts only.
Yeah,
only
scouts only.
Had it. It was scouts had it to see what the guy was
quite
throwing.
In fact, they didn't want the fans to know it. They didn't want people to see that. That completely changed probably around the 80s again, even though Danny, I think, invented that jugs gun, or he's, again, credited with it back in the 50s. That's how long that thing's been around. You know, because no one really, I think the guy that everybody wanted to see how fast he threw was Bob Feller. He was the original 100-mile-an-hour, I mean, just an absolute pill coming from the mound from 60 feet 6 to see how fast Bob Feller could throw a baseball. And he was, supposedly the only guy who could throw at 105. It's what they claim he topped out at. That's why it was unreliable at the time. So, yes, Scherzer doesn't pitch. Now you've got these 2 innings. All you got to do is get through the 8th and the 9th. You're at Fenway, tough place, no question. But you've completely, like you said, dominated the Red Sox. They're not even in the thing.
They're not even in the ballpark, Mark. In that ballpark, all those strikeouts, those few, what did they have? They had a no-hitter going through 5 or whatever. And then to think that the Red Sox were that close to getting swept out of their ballpark where they couldn't compete and would come to Detroit with 3 straight games down 0-2? Oh, no, it's a wrap. I'm sorry, the ALCS is a wrap. I would have been shocked. You know, if you want to go back to 2004 and think they're going to come back from a 3-0 and beat the Tigers 4 in a row, could it happen? Sure. But I'm just telling
like
you.
Like the Yankees series.
Like this Yankee series in 2004. But there was a good chance that the Tigers, I should say, were going to the World Series for a second straight year.
All right. So, look, you blame Leland. I still would request that Joaquin Benoit, next time he sees David Ortiz, the popster, he not fire one straight down the back bay. You know, you might want to think about doing a little dinking and dinking. I said to you, he could have thrown an Ephus pitch, and Ortiz would have swung at it.
All right, let me give you the names, because we got it wrong. No, Mike Norris.
Okay.
Steve McCaddy.
McCaddy.
And Matt
Keogh. From here, I think. Steve McCaddy's a Detroit guy.
Matt Keogh and Brian Kingman.
Brian Kingman, baby.
Four guys. And, Mark, they did real well in 1980, but it wasn't long. And then a couple years later, those guys were all done.
Burnt out.
Burnt out. From Billy Martin.
Was it Matt Keogh, the guy whose wife was in the Real Housewives of Orange County? Isn't that Matt Keogh's wife? I think the Keogh family was in the Real Housewives show. I hate that I know that, but what are you going
to
do?
Okay, can I give it to you one more thing
yes.
on that? Here we go. Are you ready for the complete, how many complete games? How many complete games in 1980 those guys had?
The four A's you mentioned?
Yep.
Under Billy Martin?
Yep.
Well, how many?
Well, come on, Mark. Just take a guess.
Think about
today where there's about how many a year? 10 or
The leader could be up as little as 5 complete games. He would lead the league now. 6-7 complete games. I would say those four guys, if you're just saying those four, the whole team.
No, the whole team.
80.
94 complete games, Mark. Think about that.
In our lifetime.
In 1980, they had 94 complete, where they would just pitch the whole game.
Yeah, I'm shocked that they're not around. Didn't last that long.
Oh, right. Isn't that a shocking number?
McCaddy pitched for a bit of time. Kingman lost 20 one year. I think he went 8-20 for the A's under Martin one year. Yes, it is. But I've done this, too. See if you know this. I think I'm right about this. I'm going to take a guess here. The last two, name in each league, the last guys to complete 20 games in a season. Who's the last one in the American League to do that, and the last guy in the National League to do it? I believe one's a Tiger.
Bill Gullickson?
No. Gully had never close to that number.
Oh.
Wait, plane coming overhead at the Rob Parker compound.
It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful day.
I don't know. Give me both. Well, how about Greg Maddux for the National League?
No. A little earlier than Maddux's era, but in the 80s. Both in the 80s, last two guys to complete 20 games in a season. I think I'm accurate here. One's a Tiger. Come on. It's too simple.
Jack Morris
okay. In the American League.
And you said a little bit earlier than
think
that.
About a phenom in the National League in the 80s.
It wasn't Dwight
Gooden. Busted out of the gate as a phenom. Not Gooden.
In the 80s?
I give you the team, but I think you get it right away.
Oh, Fernando?
Fernando Valenzuela.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah. And Lasorda let him stay in, complete game. But a lot of people credit the fact that at the end, remember, the Tigers wanted to sign Valenzuela at the end. His career could have gone longer, but they burned his arm out early with the pitches. I mean, he went, I swear to God, as I look up into the heavens, I'll bet you there were games that Valenzuela threw 160, 170 pitches. Remember, here's the thing with strikeouts. Nobody gets, you know, chicks are digging the strikeout more than the long ball now. The thing with strikeouts is, you always have to have three of them to get an out. You never get you can't have a one-pitch strikeout, which is why a guy like, and again, Rick Porcello, I'm going to mention him in a bit, came in. Porcello could go through innings where he's only throwing 5 or 6 pitches. He gets so many groundouts and early in counts. So everybody digs the strikeouts. It takes a lot of pitches to strike, because you're not, it's
you
not going to be 1, 2, 3.
You don't want, Mark, it's foul balls, it's balls, it's all kinds of stuff. So now all of a sudden, instead of taking, you know, a ground ball or 2 or 3 pitches, now it's 8 or 9 to get somebody out on a strikeout.
I think Rick Porcello this year has had either 2 or 3 4-pitch innings. Because it was bam, ground ball out, bam, ground ball out, and then like it was a 1-0 count, and then he got a guy to pop out. It was a 4-pitch inning. You can't strike out 3 guys on 4 pitches. So you're going to use the arms a little bit more. Which brings us then to the you get the Benoit pitch. David Ortiz is at 430 home runs in his career. Now has 431 or whatever total, including the postseason,
right.
450.
15. He has 15 in the postseason.
So 446.
Which they don't count in his number, you know what I mean.
Right, but if you want to tally up all, it's like adding Gordie Howe or Gretzky's playoff goals to their 800-plus that they had in the NHL. The point is that it's what he does for a living. That's how he's made his money. It's why he remains in baseball after starting in 1997. Not the fact, mention the fact that he's a 300-plus hitter the last 3 years, too. And he'll turn 38 in November. Still has the ability to do that. Not a shocker. Not a stunner. It happens. And I don't know how many he's dumped into that right field thing with that cop sitting there. He's getting all the play today on this Monday. But he does it all the time. So it's not a mystery that that's what he does. Now, your thinking was, and I don't know if it's just because people want to mention it because he's not popular now, but Phil Koch is on the roster.
I'm sorry, Mark. My first, and it's not a, you know, I say, oh, anybody can second guess. No, I first guessed it. I first guessed it when the game is going on. Didn't they just add Phil Koch for the ALCS? Because he wasn't in for the division series, but they added him. So why would you add Phil Koch if he's not there in a situation, Mark, to pitch to a left-handed batter? And it's not like David Ortiz was batting, let's see, 500 against Phil Koch. Okay, I got the numbers. Here it is. Leland could come into the press conference, Mark, and say, why not pitch Phil Koch? David Ortiz owns Phil Koch, okay? He's batting 500 against. I wasn't going to put that matchup in there. No. Phil Koch has only allowed 2 hits in 18 at-bats to David Ortiz. So that would be a nice matchup, though. And then I hear, well, he had a bad year, and then Jim Leland gives the excuse. Oh, wait a minute. Well, he hasn't pitched in a big league game in 3 weeks. So is it 3 weeks in a day? And then if he doesn't pitch the next game, is that when is the right time? At some point, what is he here to mop up? Really, you had to bring? Let me see. You had to bring him back on the roster, Mark, to a mop up duty, a left-handed mop up guy. You don't have any left-handed guys other than Smiley, who you're willing to take a chance on. I just think Leland managed scared, and it bothered me. Because, Mark, you won't win that way. And I'm not saying Phil Koch is the greatest. All I know is last year he struggled. What did he do against the Yankees last year? It was unbelievable, right?
Unbelievable. And I thought part of the reason you put Phil Koch on for the LCS is maybe he can recapture the magic. Maybe it's something in his head.
And if he comes in that spot and fans David Ortiz, now you have this guy again. Mark, you're talking about, you don't want that guy in a mop-up situation. You don't build confidence coming in to mop up. How do you build confidence? In a tough situation, a manager called me. I come out there. I strike out Big Poppy in that spot. Are you kidding me?
Well,
I got my mojo
then,
back.
You know what? Then if you could ever find out that Leland decided not to use Koch, not to even warm him up and up there and get him really ready to go, then you have something about being scared. Because now you're even afraid to put a player you stuck on the roster in a situation. Meaning, I'm thinking about it. I didn't like the fact that Koch stunk in 2013. He ain't going in, but he's on my roster. That's managing scared, because that's not even being able to use a player in a good situation.
Mark, when you add lefties, don't you look at a team situation and you say, right, you're doing your research and you're figuring out everything. Who do we have to get Big Poppy out in the spot?
Right. That should already be written down.
It should be
written down. In blood.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's just basic 101 baseball. You look at the big hitters. Who has a good record against so-and-so? Who can we bring in in a tight spot for Big Poppy? You can't act like, oh, it doesn't matter. Go look at all the numbers say Jim Leland's wrong. Big Poppy against right-handers, Mark, 339 against left-handers, 260. Is that a big enough difference? It's not 339 and 338. Oh, doesn't matter. No, it does matter. I don't understand why they would come this far to talk about winning a World Series, and you don't have a guy, a left-handed situational guy, to get out David Ortiz? You're not trying to win the World Series. And if he doesn't pitch in that spot, when do you really put him in? Really? He might as well just go for the ride. I mean, well, he's not here to pitch.
Well, the way it's being talked about, people forget that it's almost like the USA hockey team back in 1980. When they beat the Russians, that was not for the gold medal. That was to get to the gold medal game against Finland. Then they won that and won the gold medal. So even though Ortiz hit the homer, hit the grand slam, everybody's going crazy. The cop raises his arms. He gets all over Yahoo. He's trending number one. He goes and shakes hands with the mayor. He shakes hands with John Henry, the owner of the Red Sox. Yay, look at the guy. No one's concerned that Torrey Hunter went down like a bag of bricks, but but the cop should have been more on Torrey Hunter after he went over the wall than he was raising his arms in celebration of a Big Popster's Grand Slam home run. The only time a Grand Slam home run has ever, tied the game past the eighth inning in postseason play? But you still had the Finland game to get through. And, right, it was Finland. And that means the ninth inning. So you're tied at five. You haven't lost the game yet. You go to the ninth, and here comes Rick Porcello. Totally outside his wheelhouse. Totally outside of what he does. He was the wrong guy at that time to pitch the ninth inning. And I love Ricky P. If you've listened to him on the radio show on 1090 or at any point, I've written stuff about it. I'm a big Porcello guy. I think it's amazing what he's done before the age of 25. He ranks amongst some of the best in the history of baseball with his numbers, the way they are before the age of 25. He has 68 more wins than Warren Spahn had at this point in his career, because Spahn hadn't even started his career yet. And Porcello's a butt. To put him in the ninth inning in this situation, he's the wrong guy to pitch that ninth inning. I know that he's in relief. He has to get ready to pitch relief. He's not starting for this postseason, even though he was your fifth starter and a fairly capable one most of the time. But I thought when they trotted Porcello out, said he's not used to this. He's a starter who needs time to get warm. That's his mentality. So sure enough, this is now the second time. So, Rob, do you understand what I'm saying? That when the United States won the gold, they didn't beat Russia to win the gold. When David Ortiz hit the Grand Slam, he didn't beat you. He tied the game. You still had to win the game. And the Tigers had every opportunity to win the game, just like Boston had any opportunity when it was a 5-5 game. Porcello was the wrong dude at the wrong time.
And also, Mark, I'm going to tell you this. You want to talk about Jim Leland again? I'm going to give blame. He just gave up the game. He just figured that they were going to lose. Men on third, nobody out, Mark. What do you do? Can you please tell me?
You start walking, guys.
You walk the bases low to get a force at home. He just pitched to the next guy. How? You can't do anything there. Right? That doesn't even make any... Seriously. You got to walk the next two guys and play it out. Mark, infield in.
Especially since you would have gone all the way down to Middlebrooks.
Right.
I don't like Salto Lamacchia because he comes through a lot.
What if a guy hits a hard ground ball right at the third baseman, steps on the back, goes to first, you got a double play. You could get out of it. You could get out of it. Not there, go home.
I don't necessarily agree that he was kind of just giving up the ghost, but...
Mark, what was that then?
But he didn't even try to pitch around Salto Lamacchia. I thought at least he's not going to see much to hit. And you know what? The ball he hit, Rob, was basically on the ground. He kind of golfed that ball past the Iglesias.
What were you trying to do with men on third and nobody out and field in? The runner doesn't have to run.
No, he doesn't have to go anywhere.
He doesn't have to go anywhere. But if you have the bases loaded, he's forced to go home. He's forced. Right?
No, it's basic baseball, baby. Baseball 101.
I'm not trying. Look.
No, I said the same thing. I said,
I'm not trying to trash Leland. I'm not.
No, but, dude, this is the... Hey, you know what? You want to play with the big boys in the big games? If you fail in the big games, I know what you're saying. Dale Swaim is sitting at home today, fired from the Chicago Cubs, going, hey, I get no heat. Of course not. Your team didn't go anywhere. I mean, 8 other teams are sitting at home going, phew, I'm not getting that heat today. Yeah, because you're sitting at home. So, yeah, and Leland will take it. He's okay with it. He understands that he gets questioned. Not news to him. He's been doing this for a long time. Between Pittsburgh and Florida and the rest of them, and even as
Colorado.
A coach in Colorado, and then White Sox with La Russa, and he, you know, there's always questions. He understands that part. But, yeah, to have a guy on third, nobody out, and Salto Lamacchia, who, you know, he's, you know what I said about DeAndre Levy last week when I said I got to start giving up that he's replaced Veritek. I mean, Jason Veritek ain't coming back anytime soon. Mr. I've caught four no-hitters ain't coming back anytime soon. So I would have rather faced Middlebrooks, putting two guys on, than facing Salto Lamacchia.
Also, what you're talking about?
Well, have you ever had Salto Lamacchia with a little marinara?
Yeah, just very nice.
It's
very
fantastic.
Nice.
It's fantastic. Good stuff. It's excellent. Just what I'm talking about, what?
No, I'm just... I think Leland...
You sound like Leland now.
I just think Leland... I know. I'm
having an Arnold Palmer and having some wings.
Mm-hmm.
And food, okay, it's a podcast.
Food all in your mouth, everything. Dude. No, I just...
I'm going to dock your pay from the podcast.
I think he gave up. I do. I think he just gave up on that game. I'm serious. Like, no way you're going to win. That's the way I look at it.
No way, no how?
No way.
I don't know about that. But I do think he understands if he puts Rick Porcello in that situation, no matter what happens, that it's a lot less than you'd want in that position. Even you say, well, Ricky had a 13 win. That's not how it works. Starters notoriously need, that's what they call them, starters. They start. They take time to warm up. They take time to get into a rhythm. And he's used to that his entire 5-year major league career.
When do you usually get through the good starters, Mark, right? In the first inning, right? Isn't that usually if you don't get them?
It's what they always say. You better get him now because he gets better as it goes. Even with Verlander. You know, the only time to jump on Justin Verlander is not because he'll get better is the game. You've heard it a million times, and they can use anybody and get away with it. Any starter, you say, yeah, you better get to Joe Hesketh now because you know Hesketh, who, by the way, is the only guy in the
Joe
world.
Joe Hesketh.
You know why I bring him up? He's my...
I know. He lost. He never won a game. He didn't win a game once.
He got a raise.
Right. I know.
You know that one from the... Yeah. He went 0-4 and got a raise. That's because I said, I will pay Roger Clemens $80 million a year till Tuesday. But to give Hesketh $750 if you're making $500 with 0-4 and a terrible ERA, I don't understand it. All right, let's look a little forward. Obviously, that thing's done. You got your Tuesday game, Verlander and Lackey. Wednesday's Pfister and Jake Peavy. And if there is a Game 5, we'll worry about that. But all three are at Comerica. I mean, either team can win all three and not have to go back to Boston for Game 6 and 7. What do you think will result after... Let's start with the two games, Verlander and Lackey, Pfister and Peavy. What does your gut tell you?
Red Sox win Game 3. They have new life. If you don't come back feeling great about yourself, Mark, and the situation, I don't know what else. They finally start hitting the ball. They come to Comerica. They could relax. They could breathe. You know what I mean? You look at the series. It's the best out of five. There's no pressure on them in game three against Verlander. If they were down 0-2, pressure. Got to win, right?
That's pressure. What you lost by giving up that ghost. I do agree with that. You lost the pressure. Not momentum. I don't believe in that
Pressure, right.
That's a better word to use in baseball. You want to keep the pressure mounted, on, especially in the postseason, on people.
They have to win. They have to get hit.
See, I think in like hockey and in hoops, there can be some momentum in series because... You know, success breeds success, but you're always changing the pitcher every day. You don't have the same five on the floor as you would, you know, in basketball, if you want to use it that way. I think it's the other way around. I think if it was anybody but Verlander, I would say that this thing is on a roll here because of that. Your spirits are high. You're coming to town. You're fresh off this you know, yeah, high five kind of moment. I'm surprised they didn't dump champagne on each other because, you know, I love that so much in baseball. Surprised they would... Go into the locker room and start spraying champagne.
But you got it wrong. I'm not saying that they have to beat Verlander. They have to beat the bullpen, Mark. He's not going to pitch the whole game. This is not Oakland. Okay? So anybody who thinks that he's going to come out and then pitch 8 scoreless innings and give up one hit, okay, you're going to be in for a rude awakening tomorrow because that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree, too. I don't think you're going to see the quintessential Verlander performance.
He owns Oakland, and that jades the whole... Mark, this is not this year. His last three starts, right? It's three starts... Where he's gone 30 innings without giving up a run.
All right, so win or lose on Tuesday. And by the way, just to let you know, we both picked before the series. We told other people we didn't do this last week on the podcast, obviously. I picked the Tigers in 6. What did you say the Tigers in? Did you have a game number?
I didn't pick a number because, you know, I thought they were going to lose to the A's. But you know, before the season, I picked the Dodgers and Tigers to make it to the World Series. I didn't like the way the Tigers were playing. Before they got in the series with the A's.
Well, then they were down 2-1. And
No, but before that.
Well, they always lost, though, I know.
No, but before that, I did pick the A's before it started. So when they were down 2-1, I thought, wow, okay, they might not get this thing done. Now that they've won and Cabrera's back a little bit, he's hitting home runs, I just said I'm going to stick with my original pick, Dodgers and Tigers.
Okay. Now what about Wednesday's Game 4 with Peavy and Pfister? Jake Peavy has pitched fairly well over the years at Comerica.
Advantage Boston. He has with the White Sox. He did. He pitched a lot of good games against the Tigers.
And I think, didn't they come here? The Padres ever come here? Why do I remember the Padres
yeah,
here,
like
Peavy?
Once.
I think one time they came to town when he was with San Diego. Might have been his Cy Young year.
You pitching Pfister if Verlander loses?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No, I'm not changing that. You don't like me for that? Fine, rip me all day. I'm not changing that. They're not playing that game. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it. You guys, I'll rip on Doug Pfister. All of a sudden, Pfister shouldn't be in the rotation. It should be a 3-man rotation. It should be Verlander, Scherzer, and May. I wouldn't even pitch Sanchez. It'll be a 2-man rotation. We'll just go with Verlander and Max, and that's it. JV and Max with the funky eyes. Let's just do you two. Come on, man. Stick with. I'd rather lose. That's something that's not negotiable to me. I'd rather lose.
Why?
Because Pfister's my guy. Pfister had a stretch of games in there in the middle part of the year when the Tigers could have tanked it, and could have taken a little bit of a tumble, maybe to give Cleveland more of an advantage, or at that point even, I suppose, Kansas City.
All right, I'm just asking.
And Pfister
just
had
asking.
A stretch of games where he was almost untouchable. I don't know. Pfister's, is that even a question to you?
You like the way he pitched against the A's in that game?
I don't like the way Sanchez pitched the other night either, but, you know, he comes back with zeros across the board in 12 Ks.
Okay, I'm asking.
And I'm telling you, ain't no way, no how I'm touching Doug Pfister. Pfister, I barely knew her.
Wow.
Hey, oh, hey.
Where's the Messiah now?
Let's get, all right, so there, that's what that's up to with the Tigers. It's very exciting in Comerica. Cardinals lead the Dodgers 2-0 in the NLCS. What a great start to this Mike Wacha's career. Just his regular season numbers. Now what he's done in the postseason, he's carried 3 no-hitters in the eighth inning or beyond. 22 years old. He's big guy. He's got a lot cooking there. He's got a lot of pitches. He's got a lot of stuff.
Nasty breaking pitches, too. I mean, when you throw those for strike mark in the big leagues.
And he shouldn't have for the next, until like 5 years from
now. Am I right? Yeah. He's got nasty stuff. Only thing is, the Dodgers wasted two great. Greinke pitched great, and so did Kershaw. I mean, they wasted so many situations. Greinke gave up 2 runs, and that was a bad inning where he. 2 outs, nobody on it, lets the pitcher get a base hit.
Basically had 1 bad inning.
Right. And Kershaw pitched, Mark, and gave up what? 1 run on 2 hits? 1 run on 2 hit. That's
he's
all he
been
gave
amazing.
Up.
He's 2 hit. 2 hit.
2 hit.
He's a 2 hit, Gibby.
All I'm saying is they wasted those. It should be 1-1 or at least 2. The Dodgers could be up 2-0 if they got any clutch hitting. I mean,
well,
they got none.
22 innings of baseball in St. Louis has outscored L.A. 4-2. That's where the series.
But it's 2-0 in the series, right?
Right. Game 3, that's the Monday night game in Los Angeles at a very, it'll be an amazing crowd. I love Chavez.
Oh,
it's a great ballpark.
And it's the third
oldest. My second favorite ballpark.
You know, third oldest in the major leagues. The oldest is?
Wrigley.
No,
well,
Fenway.
Then
Fenway, Wrigley, and then Dodger Stadium. And it's amazing to me. It is a great place. What a great venue, Mark. I know it's an old place, but it's a great venue. The way it sits by itself, right? It's just
overlooking the mountains, and you got the thing, and the air over there is different. If you've never been to a game at Dodger Stadium, Chavez Ravine, it's really...
And it's downtown.
It's downtown.
Off to the side, right?
Yeah. It's off to the side, right off the highway. You pull right into the parking lot, and you're into the ballpark. It's really convenient, too. They built that well when they built that ballpark back about, 50 years ago now? More than 50. I think the Dodgers started there when they went to left Brooklyn, didn't they?
Too.
Yeah.
That's when they went there.
Right, because they actually played at the Coliseum for a while when they first got to Los Angeles. All right, so that's Wainwright and Ryu tonight. Love the way Ryu pitches. I mean, he's a keeper for a while. He's going to be in the league for a little bit of time here unless, you know, something
a lot
happens.
Of good
barring injury.
A lot of good breaking stuff, too. He's hard to hit. So they got...
But Wainwright, is there a more consistent guy in the majors in the last 5 years?
I just shake my head every time I watch that guy pitch. I keep counting the Cardinals out, and they just keep winning.
What's he making?
I don't know.
It ain't enough.
Not enough.
He's going to get paid eventually.
And I'm off on the number, Mark. I might be a little high.
You're high, all right.
The Cardinals, you know what separates them from all the other teams, why they keep winning? Their team batting average with runners in scoring position. You know what it is?
What?
It's like 325 or 340.
Overall,
like,
for the full
yes.
game. Not when he's after the seventh inning or
no,
from the fourth to the sixth. No?
When you hit like that, don't tell me...
Dude, the Cardinals for the last decade have done this with mirrors. They have found guys that you never heard of. Guys come out of the woodwork, position players, pitchers, relief pitchers. They're always finding new guys. You know, Mike Matheny, let's face it, a lot of people thought when La Russa left that it would take a tumble, a little bit of a dive. You know, Matheny, he'd never done it before. Yeah, he was a good catcher in the majors. Went to Michigan, smart kid. We all know Matheny had major financial problems. Still has major financial problems.
Why?
From some very bad deals he got into. It's all documented. It's not news. It's not telling anything out of school. I mean, he's been sued a million times. He's lost his home. He lost his dream house. He and his wife have gotten into some terrible deals that he was partnered with other sports athletes, just general business people who've taken him for a ride. One of the reasons a lot of people didn't want Matheny as manager was because maybe this was going to get caught up in this and he would not do the job. Other people said he needs a job because he ain't got no dough.
Because it was like Wally Backman, who almost got the Mets job.
Same situation.
And then they looked in his background. I did a background check, and he also had some domestic violence with his ex-wife.
Well, Matheny didn't have any
no,
of that.
No, I know. And that was the thing that stopped the Mets from hiring Wally Backman, because it looked like he was going to be a shoo-in. And then when they looked at all this stuff, and guess who did the background check? the New York Times, not the Met, and they wrote this big piece on him, and then after that it was like, I don't think we could hire him.
So that's the thing with Matheny, is that I didn't think that this would happen, but somehow, and their front office is one of the best, if not the best in baseball, just because they keep finding guys. And let's face it, St. Louis didn't want to pay Albert Pujols. Bye-bye. He went to California, went to the Angels. Sits in Anaheim, you know, all bandaged up and whatnot. But they don't have the God's gift to the world when it comes to money that they pay guys. They find a way to get great players in. And sometimes they lose them, sometimes they keep them. And they're starting to pay more now because they've had so much success in the last, it's been a decade of rock and roll in St. Louis, really, after, you know, kind of a downturn in the 90s a little bit. They came right back, and look at them now. I mean, how many World Series is this for them if they get there in the last, since 04, before? Five? Four? Just three?
Oh, you're counting.
It's getting there.
Yeah. It might be four.
That's
pretty amazing.
And now with two different managers.
Right.
Because Matheny and La Russa have both gone. All right, coming
and
up.
And then the one that they won in 2006, Mark, with La Russa. They weren't even their best team. I think they won 83 games that year. You remember?
Right, yeah. Right.
They weren't even that good.
You know, this is the first time since 1996, if you don't know this, I'm going to mention it, that all four teams in the LCS are Major League Baseball charter members. First time. In 96, you had the Orioles, the Yankees, the Braves, and the Cardinals. That's the last time. Now you have the Tigers, Dodgers, Cardinals, and Red Sox. All four charter members means they go back to at least 1901 or earlier. And see if you know this. You're not going to know it. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I just mentioned the four teams in 96. Can you tell me what their original names were before they were the team's name? In other words, who were the Baltimore Orioles as a charter member in Major League Baseball? Do you know who they were? Where they weren't even in Baltimore. Their lineage goes back to another city. Do you remember where?
Were they in Chicago?
No, not Chicago, but close to Chicago.
I don't know.
The original name, I looked this stuff up because I find this, you know me with this nonsense.
Well, you know what's funny is that I did also go, and I just can't remember, but I did go to Google it to look at, I thought the same thing, the original, you know, being charter members, because I thought the same thing. These are all charter member franchises. These are
17
all,
years since
right,
that happened.
Right.
The Baltimore Orioles were originally the Milwaukee Brewers. That was their name, too. They were based in Milwaukee. They moved to Baltimore, the Milwaukee Brewers. What's the New York Yankees' original name?
The Highlanders.
No. They were once the Highlanders. You're right. Okay. What was their original name? Their start of their lineage.
I don't even know.
The Baltimore Orioles.
Oh, is that right? That was the Yankees?
The Baltimore Orioles moved to New York and then became, there was a team name before the Highlanders.
And then they became the Highlanders, right.
Something else.
I knew that name.
The Boston Braves, we all know that they originated in Boston. They had a bunch of different names. What was their name when they first came into the what we now know as the major leagues? The Atlanta Braves were the Boston Braves. Previous to that, they were the Boston Bees. They were also the Boston Rustlers for 1 year. In like the 30s. It wasn't like the 1830s, but what was their original name? Very simple. It's what we always call Boston.
The Beans?
They were called the Bean Eaters.
Oh, the Bean Eaters. Wow. That's pretty.
So if you look at the standings from 1901, you'll see the Boston Bean Eaters. And the St. Louis Cardinals have the longest, besides the Tigers. The Tigers are the only team in history, I believe, try to remember, that has never had a different name at all. The St. Louis Cardinals had one different name for 1 year. Do you know what it was? They were not the Cardinals.
Redbirds.
No. Nope. You're not going to believe
what is it.
They were the St. Louis Perfectos.
No. Bad name, Perfectos.
The Perfectos. That's what their name was. Those are the four charter members who last did this in the LCS, all four teams, 1996. One final baseball thing before we take a pause for the cause and get to football on the podcast. Joe Girardi's new four-year deal with the Yankees. You like it? Do you not like it? Did he earn it? Has he been there enough? Should he be the guy to carry him for the future while all these old dudes are moving on?
I like it, Mark. You know what? I think he did one of his best managing jobs last year. What did they win this past year? They won 87 games with four everyday players out, or basically out most of the season, if not all. I think he did a great job, and they were in the hunt until the last week of the season when they got knocked out by Tampa Bay. I like Girardi. They already won a championship there in 2009, Mark. If I'm the Yankees, I want to keep him. And I guess, you know what? He wasn't interested in going back home to the Cubs, and because the Cubs don't have anything cooking right now. You might say the Yankees don't have anything cooking, but what do the Cubs have cooking? They don't have anything.
You said I'm ingrained in the community. I mean, why does everybody think that everybody wants to leave New York all the time?
No, he's got a... wait a minute. You're Joe Girardi, manager of the Yankees. And you won a championship, Mark, in 2009.
And they're willing to give you the 4 years.
Right, four years, and he got a raise.
Second highest paid behind Socha.
Right, and the other thing you got to ask yourself is...
Mike Socha, the Angels.
When you think that carries any cachet when you go around New York?
For God's sake!
Are you kidding?
What manager of the Cubs does it in Chicago, too?
No, but you're not winning, though.
How many restaurants do you want to get into?
No,
how many times you got to go to Harry Carey's or Mike Ditka's?
Very nice. No more Michael Jordan's.
Now, I'm going to ask you a yes or no real quick, though. Ready? Yes or no, Rob Parker. Hal Steinbrenner gave him a four-year deal. Would George Steinbrenner have given him a four-year deal?
I think he would have. Really? Given the situation that he's in, also that it wasn't just the Cubs. He had leverage because there was also talk about him replacing Tim McCarver, another catcher, smart guy, well-spoken. You know, he's done TV before. They like Joe Girardi. There was talk that he could have that Tim McCarver's job. So how about that job, Mark? You make a nice salary, right? Not manager money. But you make a nice salary and you work one day a week. Are you kidding? And you got your kids and your wife, and you can still live in New York and still do what, you know what I mean, do what you do. I think that's it, too.
All right, second half of the podcast about to roll out, baby cakes, 50 watts per channel. Coming up, football, obviously Lions-Browns, what's coming up this week at Ford Field. We'll get to other NFL Week 6 stuff, the two college games, the big one at the State College at Beaver Stadium, Michigan losing to Penn State, the Spartans blow out of Indiana, a little Big Ten Blows is coming up too. If you know what Big Ten Blows is, we'll get to that in a bit. Also just touching on the Pistons and the Wings, as we always will do. And to wrap things up in the podcast, we'll talk about the Matt Millen Football Life Special on the NFL Network. We'll do all that coming up at Rob is something. Don't even go there. Tut, tut, tut. If you want the tease, Rob's name was mentioned by Matt Millen on the show. And why Matt Millen brought up Rob Parker. We'll do that coming up. But first, Rob?
That's right. If you need a haircut in Detroit, Mark, there's only one place to go to. Sporty Cuts on 7 Mile Road between Outer Drive and Myers. We have a special. The all-even haircut is just $10 or $8 if you're a kid. So it's Sporty Cuts for the best haircuts in the city. 7 Mile and Outer Drive. Sporty Cuts. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, Rob.
Go get Sporty Cut.
He dropped an egg. Rob dropped an egg, so he's got his slippers.
I had to wash them.
What?
I had to wash my slippers. That's why they're...
What about the wash?
They're drying. How'd you drop... You know how mad I was? Those are brand new slippers. I dropped the egg. You know, like, what I do, Mark?
I saw them.
I don't like the yolk of the egg. So when I fry my eggs, I break it, and I take the shell, and I scoop up the yellow out of it. Not all of it, but I take
just
most of
whites?
It.
Just the whites?
Not all. I said most of it. I just don't like... All that yellow. I'll take half the yellow, but not all the yolk. So I try to...
It's egg talk.
So I egg talk. 4-4-4-4-4-4-4. So I scoop it up, and as I grabbed it up, and I was going to put the egg, remaining yolk, in the garbage, came right out of the shell, right onto my slippers. Brand new slippers.
Did you swear?
Yes, I was not happy. So right away, I took it
off.
Did
you say a swear word?
I wiped them, and then I threw them in the washer. And they don't look that bad. They're still fluffy.
Fluffy. They're fluffy. Rob's got fluffy bunny slippers. Are they bunnies? Some business to take care of on this podcast for this week of October 14th. First of all, don't forget you can email us at parkerandtheman@yahoo.com. One word, parkerandtheman@yahoo.com. I swear, I promise, maybe even next week we'll start the little contest where we'll give away some of the ESPN Detroit t-shirts. It'll be an email thing, too. All you got to do is email. We'll don't do it now. Is anybody that does it before I say so, we'll just get thrown into the delete pile. I'll make you spam. I know all those words, man. I'm into the computer thing.
Yeah,
you know?
when we first connected on the show, you're Mark. You kill me. You went from
that was 17 years ago.
And you know what you said? You didn't need a log on. You didn't even want one. They're like, you got a log on for the computer. You're like, I'm good. I don't need one.
At Fox 2, I was the last holdout. They walked in one day.
He said, you have to get a log.
Jim Varis,
right?
Walked in and said, forget the log. I'm taking your typewriter. We're going to put a computer here. It's called Newstar, and you're going to use it. You're the only one left that does their scripts on a typewriter. I was the last person. I would think like Murray Feldman would have been last, or Scott Lewis at the time, or Bill Gallagher, one of the old guard, or Al Allen would have been one of the... Nope. Willie Boy was the last guy at Channel 2 to use a typewriter versus the computer age. This was in, what, 97. So, and it doesn't even seem that long ago. It's 16 years, but it seems like yesterday. I'm all in now. I'm good with all the devices, all the gadgets, all the gizmos. So we'll do the email contest for an ESPN Detroit t-shirt. I got a bunch of them and some hats, too, and other garbage. So we'll get rid of that stuff at some point here.
I also just got a text from our buddy John Davis, who's not too happy with the who's singing the national anthem. He just texted me and said, this is what I hate.
For Tuesday?
Same old names for national anthem. Might as well get the Chrysler family singers, too. So guess who he's talking about who's going to be singing?
Anita Baker.
Nope.
I love Anita Baker.
I know. She sang a lot at the Palace during the heyday, right?
She went through some stuff, didn't she? Because I know little Walter, her son, who's not little anymore, but I used to, like, whenever Anita would come to a game, she'd always bring little Walter, and big Walter turned out to be quite the guy. But, oh, man, what a story that is. But who is, all right, so Kid Rock.
No. Eminem. Good guess.
Aretha.
Go older.
No, it's not going to happen. And by the way, Riri, you still owe me $5.
Stop it.
Go older.
The Four Tops.
I got no problem with that.
Okay, I'm just saying, but that...
Y'all hated Nickelback, but yet for the Super Bowl, not Super Bowl, but for Thanksgiving.
I don't like Nickelback, I'm sorry.
But now you're going to rip on the Four Tops?
I'm not, I'm told...
Tops and Temps, baby, you're in Detroit.
John Davis, he doesn't want to see the Tops again.
Oh, said Wilson thinks you're dumb.
All that, right, I'll text him.
Four Tops are fine with me. Also, a shout-out, oh, I'll be on. Hey, how you doing? Again, we're coming to you live via digital at the Palatial Rob Parker Villa. I'll be on SportsX Radio, this is Monday, tonight, in Las Vegas, on KDWN, AM 720. It's on the internet if you want to listen, with Ken Thompson. So I'm doing SportsX Radio tonight, and a shout-out to all my Vegas peeps.
Rob?
Shout-out!
The Justin Timberlake Open begins Thursday. I know a lot of the people that are listening from Vegas will be going to that. The JTO, we call it, the Justin Timberlake Open, even though it is actually the Las Vegas Shriners Hospital. But the PGA Tour has changed, you know. This is actually a tournament that now counts, just like the Fries.com. Jimmy Walker won the thing. Vijay Singh. Not that Jimmy
Walker. Dynamite! Awesome.
Jimmy Walker.
You used to work with him. Didn't you work with him?
4 days.
It was JJ and the Man. Do you remember that?
Dynamite!
How many times, Mark, when you sat there?
They called up every...
Could you do Jimmy, that?
And he would do it every single... It wasn't a problem.
Right.
He loved it.
Most people who get caught in...
This is like, the guy that was going for your gig before you got the gig.
Right. People who get caught up in a catchphrase, they usually hate it. Because that's all... You know what I mean? Everywhere they go, that's all people want to hear.
All right, so... I've lost it now. Oh, Jimmy Walker won the Fries.com by 2 shots over 50-year-old Vijay Singh. So Vijay almost won a PGA event at 50. He's finally...
Oh.
50. 50 Cent. 50 Cent, Chelsea Handler. She went out with 50 Cent, you know. Well, didn't really go out much. Talks about banging them all the time. It's on her show, she does. Boy, are we getting thrown here. Anyhow, Jimmy Walker won the thing, so he actually has gained a spot in the Masters. The Fall Series used to never do that. So now more and more want to play in the Fall Series. There's even a word I had heard that Tiger might want to play in the JTO because he goes to the concert. There's a big concert. And there's nobody bigger in music right now than Timberlake is. And he's the host of the tournament. He's a great guy. I've talked to him at the JTO at Summerlin. He's really a pretty good golfer, too.
He really seems like a nice guy. I mean,
Rob,
he does.
He is the smartest musician going. He's nice to everybody. He answers all the requests. He signs all the autographs. He is brilliant. He's making an absolute fortune. He's married to a gorgeous Jessica Biel. I mean, so he's got the whole family thing going. Even when he played iHeartRadio, that night, he had been at Andy Samberg's wedding during the day, because you know he and Samberg are so tight from the Saturday Night Live stuff that they did together. He went to the wedding in California, flew to Vegas, did iHeartRadio that night, and then went back to California the next day and did Kimmel on Monday. So he's smart. He knows how to promote himself. He knows how to promote his stuff, and he's the hottest thing going right now. So that's this week. That's the JTO, the Justin Timberlake Open. And, you know, as you say it, like, oh, you're just, you know, you don't know him, but he's just a regular dude. And of all those guys in those boy bands, I don't know that I would have thought he would have been the one to come out of it shining even years later as a solo act, but he really has.
Because most of the time, that's the kiss of death. You know, like, people will always remember you in that boy band, and they just can't get over it. And they're like, oh, no, we don't want that guy.
So I'm just not seeing you out there. I'm not going out for the JTO, but the Vegas people are. Any other business you want to take care of? Anything you got?
Nope. Everything else, let's go.
What about your stuff? Do the Shadow League and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got a column I'll be writing live Tuesday night from the Tigers and Red Sox, Game 3, ALCS. That'll be on www.theshadowleague.com. And
you don't really got to do the www.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
You just type in shadowleague.com.
Right, you do. You don't have to really do that. And also, you know I have a column also on clickondetroit.com twice a week. I'll be writing live from there as well for Click on Detroit. So those are the next couple of things. You know, every Sunday night we have Sports Final Edition. I did it live last night late. So Sports Final Edition every Sunday night after Sunday Night Football on Local 4, WDIV.
Lions came back nicely to beat the Browns after being down 17-7. It's a bad Cleveland team, boy. Don't kid yourself. I'll start with that. I know. Here we go. I'm always ripping on the other team, but they are terrible. They have no big play defensive guys, not one. That's how bad that team is. Rob Chudzinski's got a long way to go, and he's got good coordinators because he's got Ray Horton as the defensive coordinator and Rob's all-time favorite offensive coordinator, Norv Turner. Rob loves Norv.
That's all right. You want to give him some of this? Want to help?
What exactly is this? Okay, yeah, he needs it. Norv needs it.
Well, you know, once I did say on first take, and I kind of regret. I should have
said
it.
About his skin?
Yeah. Something about, I can't remember. I said the only thing he needs to worry about more than his skin is his offensive unit. You know,
did you get emails about that?
Skip and Jay Crawford.
You had to have gotten some backup.
No, none.
Nothing?
The only thing that he's got to worry about more than his skin is, and then Skip's going, you talking about the man's skin? I said, I would make the all-skin team, too. So I think because we kind of yucked it up, it was all right.
But I will give the Lions some credit. You know, you said never diss a victory and on
never,
the road.
Never poo-poo winning, Mark. I always said that, no matter what. Winning is always winning.
Matt Stafford, 4 touchdown passes. I don't know if you guys realized it, but yesterday he set a Lions record. That was his 13th game of his career of 3 or more touchdown passes in a game. It passes Bobby Lane. He's passed every record now, pretty much.
2-24 against teams with a winning record. That's the only stat I look at.
Oh, that's right, because that was a winning record.
No. It's at the end of the season.
Oh, okay.
So by the end of the season, this one won't count.
Cleveland will not be.
You know what I mean? You have to, it's your ending record, Mark. It will not count. Neither will the win against Washington. Neither will the win against Minnesota. You'll start going by and you'll say, okay, look, or whatever. I mean, it's just, I'm not all putting it down on him.
I didn't think it was 2. I thought it was just 1 win over.
I think 2.
Oh, more sirens. Here you go. Las Vegas people are used to that.
And Fourier, what did he have, Mark? He had, wait a minute, 3 touchdowns for 34 yards. That's all he had.
He is the first guy to make all 3 catches, 3 touchdowns in an NFL game since Marcus Robinson did it for Minnesota 8 years ago. It was a pretty nice effort. You know, I thought, and is he the first Lions tight end, really, to catch 3 touchdown passes in a game? No Charlie Sanders there? No David Hansa Sloan? Really? I was surprised by that. Even Pettigrew's never caught 3. But I thought for sure Charlie Sanders had to have caught 3 touchdown passes in a game. But Fourier, what a find. This was not even a draft pick. Joseph Fourier, that... I mean, you talk about coming out of nowhere. And you know, it's not like he was unknown. He went to UCLA.
And his uncle is at ESPN, you know, Christian.
Right, Christian Fourier.
Fourier, right. And I used to work with him on First Take all the time. Great guy and everything. Matter of fact, he does the color for the Patriots preseason game. So I saw him when he came, and it was good because he got to see his nephew play. And at that point, he wasn't sure his nephew was going to make the team. So it was nice that he was out there. And look at it. I mean, did he make the team? He's playing real well.
Well, Brandon Whedon, who someone offered up today on Yahoo, that the pass he threw that was picked off the second pick by DeAndre Levy, who I just made a big deal about last week, finally came with the program on Levy after all these years, 2 picks on the day for DeAndre, that it might have been the worst pass ever thrown in an NFL game. He tried to make a case for it.
Totally agree. I looked at that, Mark.
Under situations and everything.
And I thought, are you kidding? Mark, it wasn't like you're 2 feet from me, and I flip you the ball to a running back, and then you start running. He tried to flick the ball to a receiver downfield. Underhanded, backwards. Like, I mean, you want to talk about it easy for Levy to grab that? Mark, that was embarrassing. Remember, it was a 7-point game. It was ball game. They were driving with a chance to tie the game, send it to overtime.
I was trying to think, come on, there's got to be a worse pass thrown that should be, like, off the top of your head. Oh, no, the worst pass thrown was Mark Rippon against the Cowboys in the blah, blah, blah game in 92. Can you think of another pass that you would say would be the worst pass? I mean, that made a significant difference. It would start with a Super Bowl game and then work your way down through the playoffs. then to the regular season. So I look back at the pass a couple of times. It was stupid, but it's no different than I've seen other crappy quarterbacks do over the course of time. Just fling one up and someone picks it off. I mean, a lot of guys have made their living as defensive backs picking off passes that were either tipped or stupidly thrown. So I came up with one. All right, I came up with one. Now, the only thing is, it didn't affect the final score. And when I say this to you, you'll say, yes, that was the worst pass thrown in the history of the NFL. You ready for it?
Tom Brady in a Super Bowl where he was trying to get it to Wes Welker.
No. It was a Super Bowl, though. Think back to, what was it, Super Bowl 7? Gary Yopremian, the kicker for the Miami Dolphins, he gets his kick blocked against the Redskins. That ball goes up in the air. Yopremian picks it up and tries to throw it. And he didn't even... It kind of fell out of his hand. It bounced into the arms of Mike Bass, who returned it all the way for a touchdown. Now, the Dolphins won the Super Bowl. That was when they beat the Redskins 14-7. The only score of the game for Washington was the Mike Bass pick, I'm using the air quotes, of Gary Yopremian, who actually did kick for the Lions once in his career, but was more known for kicking for the Dolphins on the perfect team, and then the next year's Super Bowl victory as well. So I would say Yopremian's pass, even though it didn't affect the game, because and the Lions were still leading the Browns when Whedon threw that ball. But that's how close this one was, too. At one point, the Browns are driving. They're down 7. And Brandon Whedon, and this is why, Chudzinski and North Turner were in no rush to get Whedon back. But when Brian Hoyer went down after winning 2 games, they had no choice but to put Whedon back in there. I don't think he's all that in a bag of chips, right? I think there's something with him. He's not going to be the quarterback they'd hoped out of Oklahoma State when he had those big numbers for the Cowboys. I don't see a lot in him, do you?
I don't. I was very...
They got a great receiver in Josh Gordon. He's every bit as good as Calvin Johnson in many ways.
I wasn't impressed by him. I saw him in a preseason game, march the ball up and down. And obviously he did some good things early on. But those... His turnovers, his interceptions, and...
And he hadn't thrown a pick in 100 passes or so.
Well, he threw two yesterday.
Yeah, right. Threw the two yesterday.
But that last one was, you can't make that play if you're really serious about winning. You can't, Mark. You'd have to grab that ball, hold on to it, or throw it out of bounds. You cannot make that play.
Do you think it satisfied people yesterday that Calvin Johnson did make an appearance? He caught 3 balls, albeit for just 25 yards. He was not the featured receiver because Chris Durham, Stafford's buddy from Georgia college, was. And they did the damage against Michigan State in the bowl game, so it's not like he doesn't have a relationship with Durham. They go back to school, they go back to UGA, and there was a thing there when they played Sparty in the bowl game. UGA played Sparty in the bowl game, and 3 huge catches by Durham. Is that Hornet around there again, or B?
Yeah, UGA.
3 big catches by Durham from Stafford to beat Michigan State in that bowl game. So this goes back a ways. And he caught 8 balls for 83 yards. I don't know if, you know, with Burleson out, somebody had to step it up. And I think his catches made a big difference in the game. Kept drives going, kept things moving.
Well, but that's always the thing I keep saying when people are always like, oh, well, Calvin's not there. These other guys, Mark, they played football. They played at major college programs. Can we stop this that nobody else can catch the ball except for Calvin Johnson? He's a great talent. He's a all-pro wide receiver. But other guys, this is where Matthew Stafford comes in. Dude, utilize the other guys, right? You have to utilize them, make passes, have them make plays. It's not impossible.
Well, your thing is best. You just said it. His record against 500 teams, Matt Stafford, is what, Rob?
2-24.
Was Calvin on the field all those times?
Thank you. You know what?
Is his record the same?
When people were complaining about him not playing last week.
Not just Stafford by himself out there, people.
I said the same thing. I said, you know, well, what did you expect him to do in Green Bay? Calvin didn't play. I said, it's funny. Because Calvin played every game last year, and they lost 8 straight. And they were 4-12. And Calvin was on the field. So now all of a sudden you're telling me because he's not on the field, they can't win? Stop it. They didn't win with him on the field.
Well, they did win yesterday, Sunday, if you will, against the Browns. Really not much else. I mean, they played very well in the second half. They couldn't play much better, actually. And the defense stepped it up. Rasheen Mathis went out, and I love Rasheen Mathis because he's still the Jacksonville Jaguars' all-time interceptor. And now comes Cincinnati. Now, again, I had that as a win in Cleveland, so no surprise to me. After 6,
off, right?
I'm 1 off. I had them at 3-3 after 6. They're 4-2 after 6. So I'm 1 off. Here comes the game. I picked Cincinnati to beat the Lions at Ford Field based on, you know, we always do based on what? First of all, I told you Hard Knocks. I watched every episode. I saw what I know Cincinnati better than Marvin Lewis does after watching what they have to offer. They have one of the better defenses in football. Andy Dalton's starting to really roll now. Dalton comes off a 26-40, 337, three-touchdown performance in Buffalo. Overtime win against a better Buffalo team than you think. Doug Marone's did a nice job in his, so far in his first year there. And they come into town. They have no fear about where they play. They win on the road. They win at home. And you're going to see some dudes, man, that you haven't seen yet defensively. You're going to see this is going to be the best defensive team that the Lions will have seen all year. What do you think happens Sunday with the Bengals?
I think this is one of those are you real or not tests. If Cincinnati is able to come to Detroit and win this game, then again, we're messing with the same team. Can't beat the good teams, Mark. And eat off of the bad Washington Redskins. Like, the more and more you watch the Redskins, you realize they're a bad team, right? Like last night.
Bad team.
So that win, okay.
Shanahan gave him the panache, and he's losing it now.
Yep.
Because we're obviously not, this is not the Shanahan Denver Broncos.
And then you look at, you know, the other game that they won against Minnesota, the opener. Minnesota's terrible. I mean, so you start to look and say, okay, they beat Chicago when Chicago was undefeated at home. If they were to beat Chicago on the road, I really would raise my eyebrows. But they beat them at home. I give them that. And this win against Cleveland. I know Cleveland was 3-2, but Mark, the Lions have the best record over the Browns than any other team in NFL history. They're now 15-4. They own the Browns. They beat the Browns for whatever reason they do. So I look at all that stuff and say, if you beat Cincinnati, now you're cooking. You're 5-2. You're making a move. If you lose, you go to 4-3, and then who comes in after
Dallas?
Then you lose to Dallas, and you're 4-4
for the bye week.
Right. Where are you?
You're where you were
a year ago.
A year ago, you're where you were in 2007. It's that kind of thing.
Right. It's
you know,
the same thing. There's nothing.
And will it start to spiral down after that? That's what you, because now you have lost two in a row.
And the second part of the schedule is real tough. Anybody, even a real Lions fan, quote unquote home or whatever. If you really look at that schedule, the second half, you thought it would be tough.
And you're going to point to, well, they got Baltimore and the Giants
back
to
back. They're not as good anymore than you.
But they'll be better at that point. Tom Coughlin, if he still has a gig, won't let this thing get too far away. And Baltimore's starting to look better now. The Ravens are starting to look more Super Bowl-like now. I think that I'm going to hold to that. I'm not changing anything on my picks. You got to prove it to me. They got to prove to me they can beat defenses like this. I'm telling you, I don't care about numbers. I don't care even what their names are. They got guys making big money on that defensive line that are every bit as good as your little Dominican Sue and Nick Fairley and Ziggy Ansah. So there's people there that you have not seen so far through six games. And that includes you, Green Bay. This is a better defense Cincinnati has. Both teams coming in at 4-2, and so that's the game at Ford Field. Speaking of that, I wanted to bring up Reggie Bush and Drake Bell, because they're kind of becoming the killer bees. They had 168 total yards between them in the Cleveland game. And I'm going to say this right now. I don't think Scott Linehan is using Reggie Bush and Drake Bell anywhere near as much as they should. I think they're so stuck on passing numbers from Matt Stafford and getting Calvin more involved every week when he's out, misses time, or doesn't play as well. I think they're way too caught up in that. They've got to get to more smash mouth with these two guys.
I agree with you, but it's a passing league now, Mark. Look at the numbers. There used to be a big deal if a guy threw for over 300 yards. If you don't throw for 400 yards, people look at you and go, oh, he had an all right day. You remember 300 yards used to be a big day?
You're the benchmark.
Right, and now it's not. It's if you go over 400, then people say, oh, okay, he had a great day.
I'm not saying don't use him in the passing game.
No, I understand. I know what you mean.
You have the best pass-catching running back in the last 7 years, bar none, on your team in Reggie Bush. You have a guy who Heath Evans, which I really enjoyed yesterday, listening to Heath Evans do the color commentary. He played with Drake Bell in New Orleans. You've got a guy who might be second in the league to Reggie Bush on how he catches passes out of the backfield. I think there's so many more formations they could run. They could wildcat it every now and then. You could stick Bell or Bush on the outside. You could have them go into the slot area. And I think you could really make more hay with the guys you want to perform and maybe improve your passing numbers for Calvin and to Chris Durham. I'm going to throw Durham in the mix now. This isn't rookie stuff. This is a guy who can actually play. He dropped one ball yesterday. He knew it, and he didn't drop another one after that. And then Brandon Pettigrew. I would throw him in, too. He's part of the Killer Bees. His name is Brandon. And it reminded me that there was a Killer Bees from the Miami Dolphins in the early 80s. And the reason I bring this up is because Rob Palka, the one guy when I mention these guys, only talks about the guy whose name did not begin with the letter B that anchored the Miami Dolphin defense of the early 80s. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, what's his
Hold
name
on.
Again?
I'll give you the killer Bs. See if you can think of the guy who anchored this, who did not have a B in his name. There's six guys. You ready? Fromauer, Brzezinski, Bo Camper, Brown, Mike Brown, and the two Blackwoods, Lyle and Glenn Blackwood. Those are the six killer Bs from the Miami Dolphins. Who anchored that group?
A.J. Dewey, right?
A.J. Dewey.
Come on. You know, I can never forget that. Those are my guys. I almost kicked in the TV set when they beat the Jets in the AFC Championship game in 1983.
I was there.
Remember, the Jets beat them twice during the Dolphins twice during the regular season. I turn on the TV. I'm at my dorm. I'm at Southern Connecticut State University.
Yeah, I was there and you were still in college?
I was still in college.
Wow.
A couple
how
years,
about
though.
That?
Turn it on, Mark, and it's a downpour. And you know what? Your
horrible.
Coach, Mr. Don Shula, doesn't have the field covered because the Jets have speedsters. I'm like, how could the league allow this to happen? And then, of course...
Well, Shula's been involved in a number of those kinds of games.
So that was... The field was wet. It wasn't covered. I couldn't believe it. Jets lost 14-0, including an A.J. Dewey. Richard Todd went to throw it, put his hands up. The ball stuck in both of those paws. He ran in for 7 yards. I might be wrong. I bet you if I look it up, I want to say he ran in for a 7-yard touchdown.
You know what? It's so long ago. I was actually there because I was working in Miami at the time. We went on every road trip. We went to every home game, obviously. And it was just weird. You mentioned that day in that game, and we all thought that team was destined for greatness. Now, they ended up going to two Super Bowls, one with Woodley and then, of course, Dan Marino's only Super Bowl. But they didn't win him. So to this day, Shula's credit, he only has, well, he's got three, actually, with Baltimore, the one with the Colts.
How do you spell Dewey?
D-U-H-E. A-J-D-U-H-E. But that team, remember, Dan Marino, one of the greatest quarterbacks in history, never won anything. Never won a Super Bowl. Got there once and then never went back again after all these years.
Second year, right? It was
second year. David Woodley's team actually had a better shot. And that's the one the killer bees were at their best. And Kim Bocamper still does media down in Miami. So I've talked to Kim quite a bit over the course of time.
And I said 1983
is 1982. Right. Yeah. Dude, the years are way past me by now. Was it from the 82 season? But I think that game, was that game on like January 2nd of 83, though? In early 83? When was the game? Does it say a date?
It says
for the 82 season, wasn't it?
It says the performance. It was the 1982 AFC Championship game, right. So that had to be in January of...
I think it was January, yeah.
But you know what? He said, and everything that I just talked about, the field doused in water and mud
after
a heavy rainstorm, and it said at halftime the score was 0-0. The second half, Dewey intercepted Jets quarterback Richard Todd three times, including a 35-yard pass for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. And the Dolphins went on to win 14-0 to send them to the Super Bowl. I was so crushed.
So move over Baumhauer, Bo Camper, Brown, Brzezinski, and your two Blackwoods, Lyle and Glenn. They were brothers who were both defensive backs on those Miami teams with Rob's favorite kicker, Uwe von Schaman.
And the other one, the punter that Miami had, Reggie Roby.
Reggie Roby.
One of the few black punters I've ever seen, am I right?
What was unique about Roby?
Left foot kicker?
But he never left the ground.
But he only left foot?
Yes. But never left the ground. He punted. You know, guys did take the hop step and never left the ground.
He had a big leg. He was good.
Oh, my God.
Am I right?
For years.
But am I right about being a black kicker?
Yes.
I mean, punter?
He ain't going to get any less black.
No, but I'm just saying, I don't remember any other black
kicker. Well, the only black kicker, I mean, Donald Igwebuike was a kicker for the Buccaneers. I think he might have punted too a little bit too. So I think
there ain't that many of them. That's what I'm saying.
Well, Roby was a dedicated All-Pro kicker from the punting position.
Reggie Roby. I want to say Rick Roby.
No, Reggie Roby. I've always said if you put Ray Guy in the Hall of Fame from the Oakland Raiders as a punter, which of course there's the big debate now, I think Reggie Roby deserves to be in the Hall of Fame too. He was every bit as good as Ray Guy. Other NFL Week 6. How about the Chiefs? How about them Chiefs? Andy Reid, 6-0.
It always is amazing, Mark. You always say, with coaches coming in, boy, has he turned around. And I'm not saying that Andy Reid shouldn't have been fired in Philadelphia. It was a long time there. It was time to move on and do something fresh and new. So I don't have any problem with the Eagles. But, boy, what a change in culture. And you know what? For everybody dumps on Alex Smith, Mark, he doesn't turn the ball over. He's a good manager of the game. And they win.
And he's relaxed.
He's relaxed.
Not looking over his shoulder like he has his entire NFL career.
And all the pressure and all the other stuff. I'm sure he feels really good about his situation, and so does Andy Reid.
Now, the guy that I think should be the first coaching casualty of the season.
Tampa Bay?
Well, I think Shiano should be probably the same week as this guy. I would say that they're running neck and neck. Tampa is 0-5. The other guy has won a couple of games. Leslie Frazier in Minnesota. I said this last year. I said it was fake. I said it was false hope. But what Cam Newton did to that defense is decimated. It's not that's not your Viking defense anymore. 35-10. I think Leslie Frazier needs to go. I think both on the same day. Fire Shiano at Tampa and fire Leslie Frazier in Minnesota.
And Greg Jennings, who is a great guy, I know from just, you know, the NFL and stuff, but you think he wants Aaron Rodgers or Christian Ponder as his quarterback?
Oh, come
Remember
on,
all that
please.
Stuff? I know. I was just.
Well, I like the fact they brought up. They went and got Josh Freeman.
Right. They said.
You give it a shot.
Right. Why not? Let's see this guy.
Look at his numbers compared to Stafford.
He's had success. Right. He's had big success.
You'll be surprised how close his numbers are. Same draft year as Matt Stafford. Look at his numbers. And he's played a few more games, obviously, because he stayed healthy, whereas Matt early on, Matthew did not. But his numbers are every bit as nice. Playing with a crappy team like Tampa 2. Look, I said the Tampa 2 defense. So
the wide nine.
But to think that Freeman had to go because Shiano can't handle him or because he's a little bit of a, you know, he's not a malcontent so much as just being, you know, that's his personality, his attitude. I don't blame him. He's been through a lot of crap there when he didn't have to be. I mean, there's only so many of the problems in that Tampa group that Shiano's kind of caused himself. I would just cut my losses with that guy. I did also want to ask you, Rams blow out the Texans. Who knows what that's going on there? But Sam Bradford, great game for the Rams, 38-13. But the fans cheering
Schwab,
when
right?
Matt Schwab when the Schwab went down for the injury. Where do you go with that?
I understand fans that the displeasure. He threw that bad pick in that game against Seattle, and they just can't get over it. They were dominating Seattle. He throws a bad pick mark with 2:40, a pick six that cost them a big game. But I think you can't be cheering when somebody's laying on the ground hurt in the NFL. It's just. I understand the frustration, but that's not where you take it out. I think they made a big mistake there.
Yeah, I think. Are we past this? Seriously, people? He's your guy. He went down. Come on. That is so. You know what? The 1970s called. They want their stupidity back. You know, that's just. I hated that. And, you know, it's so easy to get on it. And I know it's a smattering of people. And I think Gary Kubiak was very nice about it. I wouldn't have been so. But. Good Lord. And for T.J. Yates, it's one thing if he's going down and you just sign Favre again because he wants to go back at 44, which he does. Don't kid yourself. He wants back in. But still, that was just stupidness, you know, to cheer him down. Hey! Tale of two quarterbacks real fast. RG3 threw 20 incomplete passes. Yeah, your buddy, Robert Griffin, the Twa, threw 20 incomplete passes yesterday. Dallas, easy win over the Redskins. And Peyton Manning threw two more. And the lock of the century was taking Jacksonville to 27 or 28 points. That was a lock. Should have bet the home on that.
Oh, yeah, and you would be out on the streets today.
Why?
They didn't cover.
16 points. No, take Jacksonville.
No, right.
That was a lock of the century.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I was saying that. Everybody was thinking that Denver's going to blow them out.
No, anytime I'm going to get 27 on any.
I'm taking that.
I don't care if it's God and the 12 disciples versus kindergarten.
All the big gamblers made money. They took that.
Yes, of course.
The real gamblers took money.
Look, Vegas took a shot at this. They took a gamble.
They rolled the dice.
And
they lost.
Yeah, they lost some big money.
I'm telling you, the real gamblers took that.
You won't hear this? But my first indication is it might be one of the worst handles on a regular season football game I don't know about ever, but in a long time.
You just see, so you get people get caught up. They see the numbers. They say, oh, they scored 50-something against Dallas, 52 against Dallas. Oh, they'll kill Jacksonville. Mark, going in, does Jacksonville not know they're going to be embarrassed? Right? So there's just always that embarrassment factor where you play better. Like, you know, if you don't come out to play today, you're going to be embarrassed. And guys play harder. I believe that. You don't think they knew what the line was?
Oh, yeah. Everybody heard it. Everybody knew it. It's worth the shot. Yep. I wish I had taken it. I just didn't. Stupidness sometimes reigns over me. College football. Michigan loses to Penn State.
Terrible. Terrible.
I don't even, you know, I got to tell you. Brendan Gibbons misses 3 field goals. Devin Gardner back to his tricks of throwing picks. Threw two of them.
Brady Hoke.
Yeah, I don't know. You know,
didn't he mess up on a timeout?
Yeah, but Brady Hoke, he gives a lot of his delegation, you know, to Al Borges and to Greg Madison.
He doesn't have a headset. He doesn't know what's going on in the game.
That's what I'm saying. He is the overseer.
How do you
he gives Madison and he gives Borges.
Tell me how you're the overseer when you don't hear that you're
on
the
coaching. You don't like it. I've gotten away with it so far.
You know football, Mark. There's no way you know what's going on if you don't have a... The quarterback even has a headphone inside his helmet, right? Even the quarterback. So you mean to tell me the coach doesn't need to know what's going on or what plays are being happening?
You know what was the most significant one? Remember the... Was it the Notre Dame game when he wanted the timeout and they ran the play and he went like and he just shrugged? The camera caught him going, oops, because he didn't have any way to communicate with upstairs to tell him, should we have taken the timeout there at that point? How come our guys didn't hear me take the timeout? He runs down the sideline and the camera goes, he shrugs. Because Devin Gardner scored the touchdown, so everything was fine. So he was happy they didn't get the timeout. It's the old Judd Heathcote thing. Where Mark Brown would be shooting the basket and say, no, 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 and then Brown would take the shot. Great shot, Mark, great shot. You know, he would do that all the time. So that's what happens, though, when you don't have, when you think you're running your own thing and you don't need to have, like you say, the headset on. Four overtime game, 43-40. I can give you all the numbers. The one that gets, I can't even take it, is Fitz Toussaint's numbers. 27 carries, 27 yards. I don't think I've ever seen that before. With that many carries, that few yardage. And I think at one point, he had carried like 18 times for minus one. So it was his last nine.
Barry Sanders now?
Well, at least that day that Barry did that in the playoff game against Green Bay, well, he carried 13 times. And it was a brutal day. It was a million below zero. But give it up to Christian Hackenberg, freshman quarterback for Penn State and O'Brien, and three touchdowns, two pistol, threw two picks, and got a win. And you know what the loss did? Michigan, first loss, University of Michigan, out of the top 25. They don't fall a couple of spots, even though a tough, hard-fought battle.
You know why, Mark? Because this should be their third loss of the season. Akron let them off the hook, and UConn let them off the hook. I don't care, right? This should be loss number three, and that's why no more fraudulent wins. No
I guess
more.
Not.
They looked at them and said, you were already on thin ice with those four wins. Five wins, right?
Or what are they? Five and one.
Yeah, the first five wins. They looked at those two games. Especially that Akron game, Mark, especially. I mean,
Terry Bowden will never have a better shot to beat a team like that in his life.
they let Michigan off the hook on that game. Now, Michigan didn't win. Akron lost that game.
Well, the Spartans go to 5-1. They blew out Indiana 42-28 in homecoming. It was good
win.
It was a good win. It's a good win. It's a blowout victory. It was good to see all the Lorenzo White and all the guys were back celebrating the 25th anniversary of the last time they went to the damn Rose Bowl. I can't believe that. I was watching some highlights last night, wasting my time looking at the highlights of the season of 87.
It was called the Rosebud Bowl back then because it wasn't even fully bloomed.
Well, and officially 25 years was last year, but the Rose Bowl itself was on New Year's Day in 88, but so that makes it 25 years. Hold on. Always drink your water. So all the guys were back, Lorenzo, Tony Mandarich, and the incredible Bulk. So they got to watch that for homecoming. Connor Cook, two touchdowns and a pick. He's solidly now the quarterback of that football team. Jeremy Langford, great day. 109 yards, three touchdowns, another one receiving, four touchdowns for Langford. 11 different players caught passes. Still too many penalties, D'Antonio. 10 penalties, 100 yards. But here's a Michigan State team that is now suffering because they're winning over crappy teams. They beat Indiana. They're 5-1. Michigan's 5-1. Neither team at 5-1, Big Ten teams with one loss, are in the top 25. This is the week of October 14th, 2013. I want to say this right now. I think this is the lowest point in the history of Big Ten football where we stand today, and I'll tell you why. Ohio State, they haven't lost since a million years ago, now it seems. But obviously, Urban's got it going. They're number four in the country. Wisconsin is barely 25th. And it took a blowout win over Northwestern, who was ranked, to have Wisconsin at 25. That is it. That is the Big Ten in the top 25. Ohio State and the last ranked 25th ranked team, Wisconsin. Michigan, Northwestern, out of the poll. eight SEC teams are in the top 25. If Wisconsin loses another game, there will be one Big Ten school ranked in the top 25.
That is pretty amazing when you think about it.
I've never seen that before.
That's how far...
in a league with Penn State, Nebraska, and all the heavyweights, none of them are in the top 25.
And even Michigan State, right? I mean, they get like nothing. They get no respect at all.
Talk about none.
None.
I mean, they're at a zero level. Michigan has some. But what did this tell you about this game? Yes, Penn State was unranked, but they weren't 0-5. And you lost in four overtimes, the amount never played before in Michigan football history. All I know is that there's your respect, Brady Hoke. They don't think much of you either.
And rightfully so. I told you, the wins that they had were so suspect that I think people looked at it, and then they go and lose that game on the road to Penn State that they should have won, plain and simple.
Well, here's the games coming up this week. Make your pick. Michigan hosts Indiana. Saturday. Michigan, it's Big Ten, man. I'm telling you, it's the worst. Michigan hosts Indiana, 3:30 Saturday. Spartans will, you talk about bad. They take on Purdue, who's 1-5. That's the noon game, so you can watch Michigan State Purdue at noon.
Has Purdue been any good since Drew Brees left? I mean,
not really. Not really. I mean, Joe Tiller had a little bit.
I remember him.
And then Danny Hope came in. There was no hope with Danny Hope. And now they got this Daryl Bevel or Daryl Hovell or whatever his name is. Let me tell you where Purdue stands in football right now. The Boilermakers average 15 points a game. That's 121st in the country. There's only like 118 Division I schools. They give up 38 points a game. So their average loss is 38-15. Their average loss is by 23, Rob.
Wow.
They're 117th in the country in giving up points. How low can you go? You're right. This is the school of Drew Brees and a Rose Bowl in our lifetime.
No, I know. I remember when he was there. I mean, I just can't get over how
Purdue went to the Rose Bowl.
How bad they are now.
That's where it stands. So what do you think happened in both games?
What do you expect?
I expect a blowout win by State. A blowout of Purdue.
And Michigan.
This is your opportunity.
It's at the Big House, right?
Yes, but yeah. I don't think that's a blowout. I think
no, not a blowout, but they'll win. A
couple touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking this could be a 50 to...
50?
I mean, because Purdue hasn't seen a defense like State's either all year, just like I made a big deal about the Bengals. All right, a couple other final notes. Midnight Madness, speaking of colleges this Friday, Tom Izzo in a crazy costume. What would you dress up as if you're Tom Izzo for Midnight Madness college basketball this Friday?
Dress up as a NCAA championship trophy because you won't see another
one
in his career. How's that?
Oh! You come up here once.
Twice, Tom. You know I'm just playing. Tom, I don't know. What should he do?
He's done everything. He's done Vampire. He came down in the jet. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does. Now, I tried to find out Michigan people. I should have made a call, so it's my fault, but... Beeline didn't do this a couple of times. I don't know if they're doing Midnight Madness in Ann Arbor.
Miley Cyrus?
You should dress as Miley?
Yeah, with the foam finger.
Freaking hilarious.
That would be hilarious. How about
with
that?
With the tongue out.
And all that, right.
Tom Izzo is Miley.
And twerking with some hot pants on. Okay, it's kind of getting sick right now. He could twerk.
Izzo twerking? I don't think Lupe would allow that.
No, I don't think so. All right.
Anyhow, that's this Friday, and I don't know if Beeline is doing it in Michigan. So if they are, good for you. Go to Ann Arbor and go watch that. State. Doors open at, I think it's 7:30, and they come out and do their... Even though practice started 2 weeks ago, because the new rule in the NCAA, they can start practicing earlier. Pistons off to a 2-1 exhibition start, playing Chicago Wednesday. Beat the Nets in Brooklyn Saturday. Andre Drummond looked good at 15. Monroe and KCP had 12. I'm concerned about KCP's shooting ability. His numbers aren't good already in even three games, and he wasn't that good actually before that in terms of shooting percentage.
Well, you got to get acclimated to the game, Mark. You know, people play you differently. It's different when you're in college, and that's not to make an excuse for him. But you're right. With this team, if you don't start shooting better, you're going to have to earn your way on. You know what I mean? Like going to the bench first and earning your way. I think they've given him every opportunity to play. I don't think they're trying or planning on having Chauncey play, you know, starter minutes and all that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to blow Chauncey out the first half of the season.
Blow it out.
He'd get blowed out. So.
What about Brandon Jennings? What's his deal?
What do you mean?
Well, he didn't play in the game on, and he's got some, you know, little bangs and bumps and bruises.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be ready. That guy.
See the big billboard for him.
He's this big.
See the billboard for Brandon
Jennings?
Where
is
There's a billboard on Telegraph near, I want to say, 7 Mile. All it is, it's got a Pistons logo. It's got him, and it just says Brandon Jennings.
Very nice.
That's how they're doing it. I don't know if I've seen anybody else's. Josh Mitchell.
I want you to know, they're moving tickets.
They're moving tickets.
There's no doubt about
People
it.
People want to see this team. Kyle Singler had 11 points the other day, too.
He's been a nice surprise.
So they're up 2-1 starting. This is like they had four straight on the road for the preseason. This will be game two of those four games against the Bulls on Wednesday. Red Wings off to a 3-2 start. Play Boston. Actually, they're playing right now. You have a final?
No, I don't. They started at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. 1 o'clock matinee today. Look it up. Can you look that up?
All right.
All right. I got to know what they did against the Bruins. Tuesday, they're at Joe Louis against Columbus.
Let me guess. Let me see. The Bruins came from behind. They were down 3-0.
Why did you say that?
Well, because the Patriots came from behind.
All right.
The Red Sox came, right?
Dude, and by the way, Fox, there was way too much of the Brady thing yesterday. I didn't care. I don't see the correlation.
Yes, you do. You know that Brady thing in Boston. They were going to
milk come
it.
On.
They were going to milk
it. Because, Fox, you know, first thing, I mean, even their wrap-up, first thing he said, Tom Brady led a comeback of the New England Patriots. And tonight, David Ortiz leads a comeback. It's the New England comeback. Oh, shut up. So you think that'll happen, huh? If they did that, you know, now you got to check. See if the Bruins actually did that against the Wings. Hank Zetterberg, your captain, 4 goals, start the season.
They won.
Wings won?
Yep.
Unless I'm reading this wrong, it says, 3-2? 3-2 at Boston. Win.
Is this from the Red Wings
side? Yeah, it's the Red Wings side. That's what I'm saying.
All right, it's 3-2. So you don't get your big comeback.
No comeback.
And Daniel Alfredson, 4 assists. Not bad. Okay, now I want to wrap this thing up with the Matt Millen thing. The Matt Millen NFL Network special, if you don't mind. It's called A Football Life. They do this for a number of players. And here's the situation. It was an hour-long thing, and then they did a thing called Backstory or something, where they sat on the couch. It was him and his two sons, Matthew and Captain Marcus Millen, U.S. Army. Good-looking kids. I mean, good, you know, nice guys, good-looking boys.
Nice wife.
Hey, look, no one ever said anything bad about Matt's family. In fact, we were all impressed. The people that even hated the fact that he wouldn't move here, I'm impressed how into his family he is. I get it. He likes woodworking. He likes carving things. He likes his shop. He likes living in King of Prussia, whatever the hell the name is, Pennsylvania. I get it. But part of the you can do that when you're winning. When you're winning, no one would care if you spent your days in Bora Bora. But when you're losing like that, to have that 31-84 all-time record, you know, I said, this is going to take way too long. So my point is this, before I mention you. I wrote a piece, it'll be on the website, wrapping up kind of the reign of error of Matt Millen and how he didn't speak to me for 3 years.
So it wasn't a wacky piece like you used to do on TV.
Not a wacky piece, necessarily. Some wacky, maybe some wacky. But there was a time, because if you remember, you weren't there, I wanted to tell the whole story, but it was week 6, his first year, 2001, they were 0-5. They lose that game to the Bengals when Corey Dillon ripped off the 96-yard touchdown run. On the postgame show, I said, Matt, I want your resignation on my desk by 10 p.m. tonight. Crying Lion called in. People were going crazy. The late Crying Lion. Week 6 of his first year, when we both said he should never have had the job in the first place. And we were proven right off the bat.
The first time he was ever mentioned.
People forget the first time, which was like 2 years earlier.
Right. And Mouse Davis was on with us. Do you remember that?
I need to add that to my piece.
And Mouse Davis, Mark, remember?
Laughed at us.
What?
Not at us, but we met.
He laughed at the notion that Matt Millen would be hired as the GM. He laughed.
Well, you remember that. I forgot about the Mouse Davis.
Very vividly. Because we used that clip. It was funny.
People forget that Matt went, before he was hired, 2 years earlier, there was this rumor that came up. We were at DFN, because when he got hired, we were already at 97.1. At DFN we did this. Because someone said, no, it was the only time he was. I said, no. We were at DFN. And we had to defend ourselves because I think Stoney and Woj. Was it just Stoney?
Well, no. It was Stoney and Art Regner. For whatever reason, they were working.
And they thought we were nuts.
And they were hailing it. Oh, this is great. The Lions are finally getting a football guy in. And we were like, no. We were the only dissenters at the station. Everybody else was
and Rob and I disagreed plenty. This one, same page.
We were on the same page here. We were like, what? Guy didn't spend 1 minute in the front office, so he didn't get the job the first time. We thought, okay, it's all over.
My point was, and the elephant in the room to me, with Matt Millen that was never brought up during the entire reign of error, the good 8 years that he was there, and it was a solid eight because it was 0-1 until he got fired in the year of the 0-16 season against San Francisco, one of his former teams, after that game, is why didn't Matt Millen, and I want Rob to think about this, before again, I mentioned how your name was synonymous with Matt on that show, on the Football Life on the NFL Network. Why didn't Matt coach instead of lead a team? He always talks about being the guy with the sword, says it all the time, uses the army metaphor for his son. I want to be the guy with the sword that leads the guys up the hill. You can't do that sitting next to the owner. But you can do that on the field as a coach. I think that I'm going to go on a limb. I think Matt might have made a pretty good coach. He could have been Ditka. He could have been in that mold. He might have been a pretty good coach. You can't run a team, Rob, with your heart and your emotion. You can as a coach, though.
Or Harbaugh. No?
That or Harbaugh. Yes!
That's what I'm just thinking about, Matt.
Do you think Harbaugh could run a team? No. Why not?
I just think he's too emotional.
Too emotional.
I think he's a coach.
Would Matt have been a better coach than a president?
And Matt, don't you forget, he used to come out and get down Mark and get on the field. How many general managers would do that? Remember that? He used to come down, he'd have on his sweats and a sweatshirt, and he would get down in a three-point stance and work on stuff and techniques and all that stuff. You remember that?
I tried to bring it up once after he started talking to me again, if he ever thought about coaching. He blew it off like it was no big deal. And I said, Matt, you made a... I said it to myself as he walked away. That's a horrifying mistake you made. Because you would have been better off trying to take a team to the promised land on the field than trying to put it together with the way you do things and the way your analysis goes amongst players when you were doing your television stuff. Now, here's how Rob gets mentioned. During the show, and Rob didn't know I hadn't seen it yet at that point because I DVR'd it and didn't watch it till later. During the show, they talk about all of Matt's foibles. They talk about the fact that even his own kids put up a Fire Millen sign on the Christmas tree, and he said, well played, he thought it was funny. And he did. He took all out of that very well, even at the time, so he's not backtracking. He was okay. He didn't go scream into the heavens. The Millen Man March came up. And that was a surreal day. We were there, I think they were playing Cincinnati again that day, and we were doing the pregame show. We watched the people, their heads, because we couldn't see Ford Field.
We could hear them. Do you remember? We could hear them outside the stadium.
Like doing like, oh, we, oh. It's not like that. Right. Oh, we, oh.
And the other one was...
They had effigies of Millen and all that.
Right, and don't forget, remember, the Fire Millen sign showed up everywhere. It used to be like, even at a Pistons game, like
a comic strip. There was a comic strip.
And it was everywhere. Fire Millen! Fire Millen, and it would be everywhere. You'd be at a Michigan basketball game, Mark, and then like a lull, all of a sudden there'd be a sign, and people would start cheering.
This happened like they showed it on the show. They showed some game in Kansas City. Oh, it was like Kansas City versus somebody other, and there was a Fire Millen sign there. It happened. It was like, where's Waldo?
And then was it what team made a play? The opposite that they wanted him. There was some city in the NFC North.
Keith Millen,
right?
Green Bay.
Right, Keith Millen. It was funny.
Well, the funniest part was it was Schwartz's second year when he was failing miserably. Do you remember? Just for a quick moment, the fans started cheering, Higher Millen. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Higher Millen. That was pretty good. So Rob literally gets a mention from Matt himself.
From his mouth. Not like, I remember that. No, he goes... When they said that whole Millen Man was, that was Rob Parker. And I told him it was funny, but very clever.
They should have used us, because we were doing the pre- and post-game show, and we were more involved, probably with Matt, than anybody that they actually had on there, including Hondo's house, Carpenter,
and
from WLAJ. But I know he goes to games. I'm not ripping on Hondo. He goes to games. And they used Little Stoney. They used Michael Rosenberg was on there, and Jamie was on there.
But they showed the column that I wrote for the Detroit News, and in the headline says, Millen March. And in the column, it talked about the Millen Man March.
And he stops, and Matt looks at the camera and says, that was Rob Parker. That was pretty clever.
Yeah, I did too. It's funny. Skip Bayless texted me, and he said, he made you look pretty good there. He said, that was clever. And I've told him that. That's what he told. So, that was good.
I've told Rob that.
That goes on the reel.
It's got to be on the reel.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm writing a thing. It'll be up on the website. You can read it. About the entire reign of errors, literally starting with how it got to Matt Millen through the Millen years and why it continues to this day. Why that the brain trust of Tom Lawan and Martin Mayhew was still kind of the brain trust that Matt brought in. Martin Mayhew was the first hire that Matt made back in 2001.
Well, they don't win a playoff game. I don't know if they're going, either of them are going to be sticking around or how many guys are sticking around.
But my point on the piece was that it only scratched the surface of the Millen era, that one-hour thing. They spent too much time on his career. Yes, yay, parade.
We know.
You won four Super
Bowls. Super
Bowls.
Yes, we got
we got it, which is why he should have been a coach. All right, that's going to wrap up a little longer podcast today. Good. Good for us. We're just hanging out, doing our thing. Don't forget to email us at parkerandtheman@yahoo.com just to say hey or tell us what you think of the damn podcast, what you like to hear differently, how we're doing. Maybe we suck, you know, you want to change something. And get ready to use that email because we're going to give away some of the ESPN Detroit t-shirts that I still have remaining. Rob, any final thoughts for this October 14th podcast week?
What kind of shirts do you have? You have a golf shirt or they just some Christmas gifts?
I might have a golf shirt or two left. I don't have
sweatshirts? No more sweatshirts.
No, you mean the hoodies? No, hoodies are gone.
I love that. The one I have, I still wear it.
I got the black ESPN Detroit t-shirt. I have no more grays even. I only got the black one with the red writing. I have nothing from NBC yet. Damn it all! To hell, NBC.
Can you see that or no?
That's the gray one.
That's the gray one. That's what I have as my screensaver.
Wow.
Can you see what I'm covering up?
The ESPN part? All it says is E.
E Detroit.
It's E Detroit. All right, he's Rob Parker. I got nothing else.
And he is the man, Mark Wilson. We'll check you next week on this podcast.
Say your little ending.
NB, see you later.
Parker and the man. Hey, Parker, don't be discouraged.